Hello. I'm lucky enough to be sharing the sofa with Arif Mansouri. Hello, sir.
Hey.
How are you?
Good to be here.
Great to have you. A brief summary of your career up to now, starting at JP Morgan as an analyst, I believe. And you stayed there for 12 years, is that right?
Something like that.
Around that.
A long time.
Grew into a VP of strategy. Then the next notable move was probably your time at Huge, into a global head of strategy role. Spent 7 years there, I think, or thereabouts. And arguably the glory days of Huge. I'd say that was, from the outside looking in, maybe the most successful times and most reputable work was made, which I'm sure we'll dive into in a bit more depth. And then most recently, your time at MetaLab as a CEO for nearly 3 years, which, anyone who doesn't know MetaLab, I think, again, one of the best interface agencies in the world, doing some amazing, amazing work. And above all of that, Arif, I think I really wanted to say that before we dive into this, everyone I've spoken to who has met you or knows you in some capacity has only said wonderful, wonderful things about you. So I'm really excited to dive into this. Really, really excited. But before all of this, I want to start with the question that I'm sure anyone who's ever listened to the podcast before knows is coming. Who is the first person to ever made you feel like you had talent?
I think, first of all, thank you. And it's great to be here and to talk to you about this topic. But I'm lucky to be able to say like that very traditional answer of my dad.
Right.
And it's difficult to talk about it, like about this topic and talk about me, my talent. Instead, I think his talent was to make people feel special. Everybody, you know, he just had that gift. Mm-hmm. He saw it. He paid attention to anyone who'd ever met him, and to be around that all the time, and you know, to feel that. To have somebody say to you, you can do anything, and he meant it. And sometimes it felt like wildly improbable what he meant when he said, you can do anything. But that anything comes from like a place of, you know, I don't know, an immigrant, a person who grew up without like running water or electricity.
Wow.
You know, yeah. And who ended up, you know, in the United States, in New Jersey. But he also just had, he had like a kind belief in people. And I didn't even realize how special that was until, you know, he passed away in 2015. And I saw it with like him spending time with my niece, like up until 2 years old, like she was around that energy.
Yeah.
So I'm
wow.
really lucky in that regard to just have grown up with it. And he really believed him. I mean, if he met you today, he'd be like, you know, well, you know, you should write a book. You could write a book about the thing that you're doing. He would totally make you feel like, whatever it is that you were doing, you could take it to the biggest possible place.
Wow.
You wanted to.
Wow. Amazing. So tell me how the JP Morgan thing, first of all. I mean, that's no easy feat getting through the door, let alone doing 12 years at somewhere like that. How did something like that come around, and what were the challenges in getting in?
It's funny. I didn't want to do any of it.
Really?
I just got a job, and at the time I was just in hustle mode.
Yeah.
The job that I'd gotten right out of school kind of fell through. It wasn't the right thing, and so I needed something. Mm. And I didn't know that like it would be. I wasn't like the person who was like, I absolutely for the rest of my life want to be a banker in banking, do these things in finance.
Yeah.
I just needed a job, and it was one of those classic moments where I'm at school and I was just going to meet, you know, the companies that showed up and sit in the front row, ask all the questions, right. Ask as many questions as you possibly can. And I remember that was it. Like, and so that's how I got in. Mm-hmm. Was just like, I was the most, I can say this with absolute certainty, the most curious.
Really?
About it. And so then I got in and I thought, I'll do this for 1 year. It's funny how life works.
Yeah.
You know, but the cool thing about a place like JP Morgan if you just forget for a second that it's a bank, it's a place at the time, a place of 200,000 people. 200,000 people is like, you know, a city. Yeah. And a city has all that like kinetic energy in it. It has all these people trying to move around the world. It's global. And so I could just keep doing something different every few years. Yeah. And the thing that I gravitated towards was there was a thing called Lab Morgan, which was a VC that then was rolled up and disintegrated in the first dot-com bubble. But I immediately gravitated towards everybody that was doing all the new stuff, innovation, technology, working with smaller companies, looking at acquisitions of startups or infusing energy into startups. Wow. And that from the very second that I got there was what I had the through line for, which is like, how do we make sense of all this amazing stuff that's happening in culture and integrate it into the fabric of these 200,000 people? So that was a series of all the firsts. You know, how do we use an instant messenger? Like, how do we make people communicate with each other? Mm. You know, how do we have a website that really speaks the brand or articulates ourselves? So it's like all the classic things that we know of the work that we do. But the first time anyone ever had to really think about it with sincerity or passion is how I felt about it.
And what about at that time? Well, how do you realize that strategy is a route that you go down? But also at that time, was strategy, did it feel as important as it is today?
The thing also that I carried with me is that the definition of strategy I have found, particularly in agency land, is slightly different from the definition that you have when you work inside the house of a corporate or of an enterprise. We thought of ourselves as business strategists, build businesses, or help achieve a particular goal and then make the case for that particular goal. I was always good at that, like case building, which is a big part of what agencies do. But it was business. People didn't think about it in terms of like necessarily the way a creative agency does, which is even the term a strategy. You hear people say, I'm a strategist, and there's a strategy in it. It's about positioning. It's about creative. It's all these things. You know, inside the house of a enterprise, you're just in the business. And you're just trying to make things grow, or you're trying to figure out how to make things efficient. And the way that you get there, that plan of action, which we can talk about, like I started to define and have a definition for my own self of what strategy was. But that act of continually moving things forward and having a plan was kind of what it was about. So I don't know if it was like the moniker strategist mattered. Mm. It was more that you were the people helping the organization deal with the gnarly things and move them forward.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense? Yeah,
absolutely. It's kind of blowing my mind right now, I'll be honest, in a very, very good way.
Hmm.
And then I'm sure we could spend loads and loads of time in the house of JP Morgan, but when does the decision, how does something like a huge come around? Because it feels to me like wildly different beasts in many different ways, but how do you go from here to there, and what's the kind of problem you're coming in to solve?
It's a weird transition. I think a lot of people ask me that question, and like, well, how did you move to this? And I think it's when, and I always give this advice to anybody, whenever you bump accidentally into your people, the kinds of people that you really have amazing conversations with, like really pay attention to that. And so what was happening was with me is like, we were hiring agencies, you know, so,
of course,
you know, you're doing jpmorgan.com, which I managed, a part of, and you're rethinking the whole thing. And in comes, you know, Razorfish is, I believe, who we hired. Yeah, it was Razorfish. And, you know, they look really cool. And they're talking with like depth and sincerity about the things that I was like, oh, look at that. And for me, it was just such a wake up call, because I'm business, right? I'm in the spreadsheets. The way you determine success at a place like JP Morgan is you're constantly talking about ROI. Mm. You're constantly explaining the language of your language is that of essentially, will it be successful if we invest in it? And that means money, you know? But I was missing that continuous conversation about creativity. And that's what I talked about with my friends outside of work. And so these were the people that I was like, oh, shit. Like, they talk about this at work. Mm. So I made, a beeline towards them. You know, I was like, I will work at IDEO. Yeah. Or it just sounded cool. Innovation consultancy. I don't know what the hell that means, yeah. But I'll work there, you know.
Yeah.
And I just kind of met a lot of those people. And I applied online. And right. The only reason that anyone looked at me is because it was the recruiter's first day on the job and my resume was the first, she told me this later, was my my resume was the first one she saw.
Really?
And she was just like, I don't know, I'm like, let's give this a shot.
Wow.
So that's how it happened.
Wow. What an interesting story. Because and this is why what's really important about that point, although it seems like fortune and luck at the start, I think what I'm hoping someone like Huge saw in you was you're 5 degrees away from what the obvious hire would be to them. You know, you like an outlier, and you bring in so much amazing knowledge from a neighboring industry that I'm glad that they saw could apply in such an amazing, impactful way there. What was the mission that you were posed when meeting those guys? Like, what was the problem you were coming in to solve?
That's a great question. I came in as a practitioner. I first think that Huge was very, at the time, you know, I'm not there anymore, but at the time, it was very interested in weird brains. Mm. And just put, like, it had a confidence that it could cobble together the right teams if they just had the right attitudes, you know? And so my first mandate was just to go, like, I don't know, work on a client. This client is complex. That was it. It was really just like, really? It's complex and it has opportunity. I think there's always just like, can you elevate the discussion? It's always something like that, you know? Can you get access to people who are decision makers? Can you get access to people who are doing the more interesting things inside of the company if you can speak the language of them?
Wow.
So it really is about language, you know, and what I was learning was how to be and embody, you know, creative. And what they wanted was that ability to do that, to grow into that those creative clothes, but to maintain the knowledge that came from, you know, years of doing M&A, yeah. You know, or years of doing product development or looking at vendors from you know, the client side. Mm. So maybe the mandate really, and I think is like developing a deeper empathy for the situation the clients are in and developing a greater confidence about the situation that they can create. Mm. That to me is the role of everybody who works in our industry, but you know, it's almost like the deliverable of somebody who embodies the word strategist.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like getting to that point in a conversation, I understand your innate curiosity is such a massive factor in that though. Like, we won't get anywhere without asking, yes, the right questions, but just also the dumb questions. You know, I think it's so important and something that we really just try and just repeat over and over again to understand the person inside and out is let's spend a day in the life in your shoes. Like, I want to know everything and ask, and forgive me for asking stupid questions. And I just think that curiosity factor as a strategist in particular is just essential to get in the room, but also execute, you know, and deliver the right thing. So yeah, absolutely. Great. I'd love to know a bit more about Huge at that time.
Hmm.
And from the outside looking in during that moment, it felt very progressive. It felt like new weird brands were being built, and it did feel like innovation was happening. What was the environment like at that time?
What I think is funny is that, you know, Huge is born in Brooklyn, and it's a big part of its like identity.
Mm.
And it also was born in a Brooklyn that was very influential. You know, that also that sort of heyday of sort of the arrival of this place that would then, you know, create the coffee shop that every other coffee shop in the world would look like. You know, it was sort of a lot of flattening of culture exists now because of probably some aesthetic that was created then.
Wow.
And I think that that's one part luck and one part just, you know, knowledge of the founders and the people who essentially found Work & Co as well. And Huge are the same people. And so there's just like, there's a cultural element to the backbone of it. And then there's another thing that was associated with like really, really caring about design, like just like bleeding it in every way. And making sure that that was really critical to everything that they did. And that's what it attracted. So people who cared about that culture, cared about design, or want to just be near it. So that's mm-hmm. me, right? I just want to be near designers and near the work that they did so that I could then, you know, have it be a part of my fabric.
Mm-hmm.
It was filled with swagger. It was filled with like practicality, because product people and designers, I think, are pragmatics in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we started to build out more what I would call marketing capability and marketing chops during that period too. But that was, I think, a pretty big, like almost like a cultural moment for the company that it wasn't sure what to do with. But, you know, if you think about marketing creatives, like often they're loftier, they're bigger, they think massively.
Mm.
They think in concepts that don't have to be bound in software. And so that's what was happening at the time when I got there. And I didn't know that this was a new era for them. So you were constantly in a moment, and I think this is really interesting about any place you work, where people talk about the old version. When I got there, people were like, oh, this is version like 17, you know.
Really?
Old Huge is dead, you know, or like, you know. And then very soon, you know, I was saying that. I was like, old Huge, the part that I, you know, was part of. So I think these are places that are growing. So that's what it felt like. It's just that constant progressiveness that comes from being in an ambitious place. Progress is always comes with destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're never not destroying the old to produce the new. If you do it really well, you're maintaining the things that matter.
Mm.
Anyway, I waxed poetic on this long question, but I did really love it. And everyone who was there during that period that I know have talked about, even with all of its, you know, challenges, because it's a place where you work. Loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. And then we're going to fast forward a little bit to your time at MetaLab. I'd love to know, and for the listeners as well, who, as I mentioned before, who might not know those guys, it feels like a more of an obvious move from the JP Morgan to the Huge, let's be honest, but also very different in their business proposition and how they operate, you know, with being distributed all over the world, remote, as far as I was aware, fully remote.
Yep.
What was that like?
Well, I mean, ground everything in context. It was the middle of the pandemic.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was 2021 and everyone's getting antsy and I'm getting, just getting ready. I could feel like, you know, everything in my body wanted to get up and move and do something different. I feel like everyone kind of felt that way after sitting still for a while, you know, and sitting still felt great too for some people. And it did for me. But that sitting still moment forced me to say, you've got to right now go do something. And then, you know, somebody taps you on their shoulder. At the time also, like, there's like an explosion of desire from everyone on the world to get people like me and all of my peers in their houses, right? So constantly somebody was coming out of the woodwork with to everyone I knew and saying, like, do you want to do this? And then one day somebody taps you on the shoulder and I say, do you want to be the CEO, the first time CEO of this storied, you know, product design powerhouse that has, you know, built and designed every seminal experience that you can think of that lives, you know, on your phone, you know? I think you say yes to that. So I did. And at the time, you know, just to like think about it in terms of personal context, like, you know, it was just the time that I felt like I had a great deal of momentum in life. You know, I was ready to go do something else. So I did. And they're an incredible group of practitioners. I mean, so, so talented.
Wow. Is it scary when you're going into essentially something that you've never done before in an agency that you understand the talent and what they do, but what was the feeling before going in there? And also that first 2 months, like, is that just holy shit, this is going to blow up? What's the feeling?
Oh my God. Terrifying, but also exciting. They all come at the same, like, that feeling of momentum that is generated in you, you know, whenever you do something new, whenever you step off into the world and say, like, I'm going to try something else. That was the feeling, you know? You know, you should not do something, I think, with a company if you don't think you can help. So I had to believe that. I had to say, you know, the problems, the opportunities that they've identified, I can help. So there was that. But then you have the other part of you that's whispering, but you've never done it. You know, you can help, but you've never done it. And you say to yourself, but I've helped everybody else do it. You know, I've worked with 15,000 CEOs, you know, can I embody that seat? You know, and then you ask, can I care? And if you can say, I want to help, I'm going to do my best. Do I care? Is this exciting? And you have yes, yes, yes. You can feel it. You can feel a hell yes in your body, you know? And I did. Yeah. So it was scary as hell, but I did.
Love it. You once told me life is about momentum and getting yourself in those rooms that can help create that. Why is that so important?
I think it's an obsession of mine right now, to think about the rooms that you should be in. But first, to answer your question about like life being kind of a momentum game. It's like, you know, when you're in periods of life that are like low momentum, and you know, when you're in periods of life where you feel like a great source of momentum. Momentum, I think, if I understand it to be, once you start something, that feeling that you have the capacity to do more and grow, that's momentum, you know? And that once you feel it, that then you do it, and you are moving forward. And what a great feeling that is, even if it's like really jagged, and it almost always is. I think what's cool about people who are experiencing momentum, and it's like, it's not something that I describe and about anybody, but I do think about it, like, you know, if so-and-so in your life is feeling a sense of momentum, it then infuses almost every other part of their life. You know, they're like excited, they're cool to be around, they're energetic. And I really think that that's what, at least for me, I seek in a place. And I sometimes know and I think you do too, and I think most of us do, is when you walk into a room, does it suck the energy out of you? Or does it like frighten you a little bit? You know, do you feel like you want to be in it for a while? Do you want to meet everyone in it? You know, and that's got a lot to do with, you know, the kinds of places that we get to work in. So I focus a lot on environments and mm-hmm. conditions. Like, how does the space feel? You know, is an easy thing to think about when you walk into like a restaurant. What's the sound of it? What's the feeling of it? You know, you walk into a coffee shop. Is it chill? Is everyone making jokes at each other? So use those feelings, you know, I think, and in places of work to decide whether or not that environment is going to be useful to your sense of momentum. Mm. So tenuous link between these two concepts, yeah. But there's you and then there's it.
Mm, 100%. All right. I want to lean into your strategic brain for a moment here to understand where you think the industry is going, how you interpret that, and what might need to change and what might not. You know, we're seeing so many agencies repositioning themselves as more of a, you know, building a strategy side to the business and moving further up the tree, or wanting to and constantly trying to build that side. Why is that? And what do you think is so important about that thing?
First, I don't think I'm a student of... I don't think I'm as deep a student of agencies.
Mm.
I think I'm a deeper student of the clients that they support. And hopefully this discussion about what are the clients going through, what is, you know, sort of society and what are institutions going through, hopefully that informs what happens to the, you know, the people that help them build, create, make things, whether it's campaigns or whether it's, you know, products. So we really have to be looking at like, what are companies going through and what are the people inside those companies going through? And that's where the industry will go, right? So I think, you know, one thing to think about is a question you should always ask is, does industry have the talent it needs in its house to do what it thinks it needs to do? If it does, it will not hire other people to do it.
Yeah.
It's just pretty simple. Is there momentum and energy of its own right and capital behind the kinds of initiatives that the agencies might support? And that answer will also tell you what's happening to the agencies, right? So I think in digital, what we're seeing is like a slowdown of momentum and capital of a certain kind for a moment.
Mm.
And agencies have felt that pain. And over the last few years, we're seeing, you know, the outgrowth of that. That's not to say that digital is not powerful, mm. that this technology and this capability around product design and product management and technology and engineering and all that capability isn't going to matter deeply. The reason I think why people are investing in strategy, and I think they have to, I have a strong POV that they must, is because if they're going to help those institutions progress, they're going to have to see their businesses for what they are, and they're going to have to help them make the right investments.
Mm.
It's not as easy anymore as everybody did a website this year.
Yeah.
You know, everybody made a mobile app this year. But I have this giant caveat and asterisk on all of this, which is we're just in a holding period. Like, I think there's going to be an explosion of work. I feel
really,
really excited. For the right kind of company, for the right kind of, you know, for the right group of people, we're going to be in a bonanza of institutions figuring out what to do with, after this somewhat of a pause, what to do with all this latent energy that they have, this capital that they must spend. They're spending it now in AI, and we can talk about that too, but like, mm-hmm. they're spending it in sort of wait and see modes, some of them. And I'm talking about enterprises, which is one universe. Startups, of course, are becoming very, you know, AI born. But this will always come together, you know, and there will always be a need for people to support them. So I don't know, that's my rambling answer, that where the industry is going is where the clients are going. And something about what the offering is providing today, there's not as much demand as there used to be, just for the moment.
Yeah. I can really feel every time we speak, I feel like especially in the last 3 months, it's been full of energy. Like it feels like you're ready to take on the world right now. And I know that, congratulations, you've recently become a father. What has that taught you? Whether it's a perspective thing. And then follow-up question is, why do you think that's so important coming back into the industry?
First, we started this discussion of talking about my dad, you know, and so being a dad to me is like, it's wild. It's the wildest new moniker that I can attach to me, like dad. So first, I took time off, deliberate time off, to be dad for the first time. I've never taken deliberate time off before, you know. It's not something I'd ever thought about doing. I'm like sort of obsessed with working. But I became obsessed with not working and being really clear on what that looked like, and then being really clear on what this next phase of life would bring, which is to be a great dad if I can. So I took that time. And then during that period, all this stuff happened in the world, as it always does. Like, the world continues. I didn't take that much time off. It was like, you know, six, 7 months. And you start to feel a little bit of FOMO, and you feel a little bit of excitement, and you feel like it's like, you know, you're tingling with like wanting to go back and re-enter. But what I found was that the people that, you know, didn't have a kid, didn't take that kind of time off, didn't do those things, many of them were just being ground down, a lot of them, in the day to day. I didn't have that day to day. And I have all this like latent energy and excitement and optimism, because I kind of am only looking at it from one vantage point. Now, I'm doing, you know, consulting and strategy work right now, exclusively, like client practitioner strategy work, you know, and that is like, it's what I love. Strategy is a plan of action under conditions of uncertainty. To compete, you know, people feel a lot of uncertainty right now. When you can help people feel a little bit more certain, there's a very gratifying feeling. Mm-hmm. So that's maybe it. That's why I'm so psyched. And then all the technology, all the capability, it's gnarly.
Yeah.
Like, the challenges that AI will bring on a societal level are really, really interesting. The challenges and opportunities that it brings on a day-to-day, like just making things level, are really, really interesting. So we're in a moment. Mm-hmm. And that moment, like, you know, we're in it, but it hasn't really affected us yet. What a weird thing.
Mm.
Like, it really hasn't affected people's day-to-day, but you know it will.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's that inevitable thing that we're kind of all just waiting for, because it's, you know, progressive technology has been a thing that we don't feel firsthand, but we are absorbing every day, you know. And it's that level of technology, I think, some of the most impressive is the ones where you're not even expecting it, yet your life is becoming ultimately easier, more efficient, and better because of it, you know. And I don't think it needs to be this release of AI V3 that is going to affect everyone's, you know, fingertips. It's like, it's the stuff that's happening really subtly and in the background that makes it so impressive. So yeah, it's interesting to see. It feels like we're in a time where it should be easier than ever to set your own thing up. That anything is possible thing feels more possible than ever. But it will also come with its challenges. Like, I think that there'll be a lot of things that break, and to be able to be successful in the world of this new technology that we speak of is you need to be in the room where you're able to keep up and understand it. I do feel like people can, you could get left behind.
I think it's a more useful thing for me to say yes. Mm. Like, let's say I have, my mission is to get people to not be left behind. Then the thing I should probably say now is yes, you can get left behind. Mm. It's because what I want people to do, what I want myself to do, what I want everybody to do is to become versed in the way that the world works at any given moment. Like, now you can choose to adopt or not adopt something in whatever context you want. For instance, like right now, there's a guy named Jonathan Haidt who's writing, he wrote a book called The Anxious Generation. And he's talking about essentially digital screens, social media adoption with kids and teens. And his basic value, his basic proposition is, I think it's no screens before high school, right? Mm. He's not saying no screens. He's not saying this is not, technology doesn't exist. He's not saying social media doesn't exist. He's not telling people to like destroy it all and that it didn't have any value. He's saying, do not do this to these children, you know? So I guess my long-winded answer on adoption of any technology or any capability is adopt it, think about it, use it, know it. Know it for what it is. Keep asking those questions, but don't ignore it.
Yeah.
For the love of God. Yeah. is here. You can't, it's like ignoring climate change. Like, what are you doing? Like, you can't ignore forces that exist.
Mm.
And that's what I would want for people to know and feel and to do it today.
Mm.
Don't. Again, momentum's that ability to, once you start, to create growth. So start, just start, and then feel a sense of momentum that comes from it. And when I meet people who I'm excited about, they say like, I'm creating, I'm moving, I'm doing stuff, I'm playing, you know, pretend that you are creating, moving, playing until you actually are.
Yeah, and that's an energizing thing, you know. Is also being around those people, like you said earlier, is that's only going to help you grow and the thing become easier to understand and less alien. I'd love to know, is there a thing that goes in your head to know when you really feel like you're operating at your best? Like, is there a moment that, whether it's being in flow or is it a feeling? When can you think of a time where you're like, holy shit, I'm at my best right now? And what are the criteria that needs to happen to put you in that state?
It's funny. Immediately, there was like a memory that just showed up when you said that. I remember this like one moment when I was like, I don't know, let's call it 23 years old or something. And I was up presenting in front of a room. I had just gotten up and we were talking about some new capability, and I was talking to a technology provider, and then I was talking to like the creatives in the room or whatever it was, and my boss, who's like this super impressive person, whispered, he just like leaned over and he said, oh my God, we're all going to work for him one day. And I've heard people say, I've said that about, you know, it's like something funny that somebody says, but I love when a room, and I don't know, maybe it's just physical spaces, when the room sounds good, when it feels good, and you can be, you know what your role is inside of that place. There was a coffee shop that I used to go to every single day. It was tiny. And in that coffee shop, that crew, the ones that worked there, and in this tiny place where the line went around the block because it was the only coffee shop in that neighborhood, not because the coffee was great, would make like these amazing jokes at everybody on the line. And you're talking about like, you know, bleary-eyed bankers, you know, like think of like every stereotype that you can think of as it relates to these people. And they would get them to laugh and they would get them to like love the line. No one in New York loves the line.
Yeah.
But to love the line. And when I feel like at my best, I'm in a great room where it feels right, you know, and I'm able to make other people move forward, you know. So that's flow. I think that's flow. But it's not an alone flow for me, even though that exists too.
Yeah.
I love going deep. But... you know, I just love working with other people.
Yeah.
And helping them see maybe something that they didn't see by simplifying a concept or by showing them, by provoking them a little bit.
Mm.
That's really fun.
So, and how does that influence a leadership team then? I'm just trying to think of how, because if that feeling and alignment in of community around you isn't there, that could cause problems. So how important is it to pick a right leadership team, and what makes a good leadership team?
Let's keep going back to that coffee shop. That crew, that line, like they had a vibe between them. Mm. They passed things back and forth. You know, you could see that the thing was running efficiently, which meant they weren't like, it was a dance and the communication was good and they were kind of moving coffee back and forth. But then they also like, they had a looseness and ease with each other. And that then made everyone else feel that. Mm. I think leadership teams, all teams, not just leadership teams, there's nothing specific about a leadership team to me that isn't true for most teams that have a purpose. First, you have to have a purpose. Mm. If they're loose with each other and they believe in each other and they know each other's roles, then the whole thing can become a dance. And you can do really amazing things and hard things. The looseness is so critical because the hard things are coming.
Mm.
And with executive teams, you have to make really, really tough decisions together. To trust each other and feel that. But you that trust comes from work. You know, it's very few teams that are just like everybody was there on day one. Mm. That's to me, like that's some kind of amazing alchemy. It's more that you were up late together a couple of times. Mm. You know, it got really hard and you went through something together and then you were loose, you know.
Yeah. Amazing. I wish we had more time. I could honestly just go on and on, but Arif, I really, really do appreciate your time. It's always so fun spending time with you, hanging out, and just like, just my jaw dropping, essentially.
Thank you, man.
So no, I appreciate it. And yeah, that is the end of that.